We have learned the Ovim Uberuchos, when it comes to clouds and to winds, Lo Chivu Chachomim Lahatzkir. Our sages did not require that mention be made to them. In other words, you didn't have to say, for example, God causes the clouds to gather, or he causes the winds to blow, like the Masha Baruach. They did not require it. We see from here that the two words, Masha Baruach, if we say it or whether we don't say it, it's not that serious to cause us, that we have to repeat Shemoneh Esrei. In the summertime, if we said Masha Baruach, and that's it, or if we said Masha Baruach Amorid Hatal, that would also be okay, because there's no obligation to recite either Masha Baruach or Morid Hatal. But if we would say, for example, at this time of the year, Morid HaGeshem, then we wouldn't have to repeat it either, because the essential part is not the causing the wind to blow, but it is the fact that the rain falls. See, Morid HaGeshem. This is the thing. So, Lo Chivu Chachomim Lahazkir, our sages did not put us under the obligation to mention either clouds or winds. So if he feels like mentioning it, he mentioned it. So they say, my Tama, what's the reason? So it's a similar reason to what we had before. Mishum lo miyotzrei, because they are not withheld. In other words, at any time of the year you could have clouds, at any time you could have winds. Okay. Lo miyotzrei, so now the Gemara says, you mean they're never withheld? The Hotni, Rav Yosef, didn't we learn that Rav Yosef taught that the pasuk v'yotzar es ha-shamayim, that we say in the second paragraph of the Shema, that God will literally shut up the heavens, right? Because the pasuk, remember, is v'yotzar es ha-shamayim v'yamota, right? But he gives a drash. What is the drash? He says, what does it mean v'yotzar es ha-shamayim? He will shut up the heavens. That's min ha-ovim and min ha-ruchos, so that there will be no clouds or winds. Ato omer, you want to argue with me and say min ha'ovim min ha'ruchos, that it means, that God will not permit the clouds or the winds to blow, or maybe what it means elo min ha'motor, that it means that he will shut up the heavens so that there will not be any rain. So why does he say that? No, this is a reference to the other things. Kishahu omer, he says, look, the pasuk says specifically afterwards, right, v'lo yeh motor, there will not be any rain. So hare moto omo, so it says specifically rain. So homani mekayim yotzar shemayim, then that, what should I do then to interpret, that he will close up the heavens, he will shut up the heavens? So it has to be min ha'ovim and min ha'ruchos, so from the clouds and from the winds. Kasha ruchos ha'ruchos, so the Gemara says, there's a difficulty between one pasuk or one taich about winds, and other taich about winds, and kasha ovim ha'ovim, and the same thing with clouds. So he says ovim ha'ovim le'kasha, it's no difficulty about the two different clouds. Why? Ho b'chorfe, ho b'afle, because you can have early clouds, as Gemara, as Rashi interprets, in other words, the clouds that come before the rain, and the later clouds, those are the ones that come after the rain. Aruches, it's also, he says, like kasha. It's not a kasha. Ho beruach mitsuyo, when we have nice, ordinary winds, then in that case, that's good for the world, right? Ho beruach she'ino mitsuyo, but, the bad things that God will shut up and not, as a reward for listening to God's words, will be that he will shut up the evil winds. But if we don't listen to his words, then what will he do? He'll release the evil winds upon us, right? So, b'rashenu mitsuyo, right? This is with a wind which is unusual. In other words, like a very strong wind, cyclone or something like that, okay?
The hurricane.
Yeah. So they ask the following question, hurricane, right? B'rashenu mitsuyo, a very unusual type of a wind, it still is good for something. What is it good for? Chazil v'edore, it says it's good if it falls upon the grain in that it'll make it easier to separate the chaff, you know, from the kernels. So he says you don't need a wind for that. Efshar b'naf and bosa. It's possible to do it also by sifting them in a sieve. You can get the same result. All right, we'll stop at this particular point because the next again is related. But we're still in the winds. But we'll start with the winds over here next time. Okay?
So yeah. It's...
So we're now
on
Ahmed Bey's about two-thirds of the way down. Yeah. Okay, so next week, Mr. Shem, we'll meet again at 8 o'clock and continue.
At 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, pardon me. Okay. Tana, we have a tradition. Namely, that clouds and winds literally are secondary to rain. Now, the question is, what does it mean by secondary? So for that, we have to depend, of course, upon Rashi's interpretation. He explains that it means that it's almost as good as rain as far as bringing benefit is concerned. And this is exactly the way Tosfos understands. So you see at the bottom of the page over there, it says Shnius Lamotar. Says Shnius Bemala means that it's in the ranking order, it comes like second in the from the top. Okay, Kedamra Yinshe, as people say, Mishta Lamelch. You know, the viceroy is Mishta Lamelch. So that therefore, this is right next to the king. You know, is the good rain and things like that. But
like a primate.
This also can bring benefits to humankind. Okay. So now that he says that, So Gemara wants to know in what way. Hechidomi, how? Tell me. So Omar said, Yitema Rabbi Yehuda. He says the Boso Mitra. We're talking. He says about a wind or a cloud which comes after the rain. So. Now the Gemara questions this. It says, "Lameimar, do you mean to tell me, Demal Yusahu, that this is a benefit? That you know, if you have either clouds or rain or winds after the rain, that it also is going to bring benefits?" The Hawk Siv, we have a pasuk. This is a pasuk of the Torah in what we call the Tochicha, you know, the rebuke of the people of Israel. Where Moshe says, "Yiteinat Hashem es betara tzecho avok v'yofor." He says, "May the Lord make the rain of your land even like dust and dirt," which means, of course, that the rain itself, you know, if the people of Israel did not listen, then it means that the rain itself is going to produce nothing but dust and so on. In other words, to produce like dryness, which and you know would not be of any benefit whatever to the earth. The Yoma Ula, and Ula said the Tema Rabbi Yehuda, and there are those who say that it was Rabbi Yehuda. He says the wind that we're talking about is Ziko de Bosamitra. This is a strong wind which blows after the rain. So that, he says, is not any good. As we said before, in other words, if a hurricane comes, or you know, after rain has fallen, then it's not going to bring any good. So in that case, here we said that after the rain it's good, and now we say that after the rain it's not good. How do you resolve the kasha? So they say, "Lo kasha." Nah, it's not a difficulty. He says, "Hoda osa nicho, hoda osa razio." He says, when it comes gently nicho, right? Then in that case, it's a benefit. But hoda osa razio, if it comes down forcefully, if it blows forcefully, then in that particular case, it's not good. We skip the words in parentheses because Rashi says that we should. The reason being, I'll explain. The Iboy Seimon, if you wish to say, usually introduces another reason. Whereas the text itself is simply saying at this point, another illustration for the same, is only amplifying the illustration. It says, Ho de mala avok, ho de lo mala avok. A strong wind is going to do what? It's going to raise up dust. So this is what the Tochicha is referring to, that it's not beneficial. But hodolo balei ovok, But when we say this wind, you know, a wind which has not raised us, this is a benefit. And if it comes after the rain, so it's second in importance to the actual rain itself as a benefit for mankind. The Yomer Rav Yehuda, Zika the Bosa Mitra Kemitra, Ivo the Bosa Mitra Kemitra, Shimsho the Bosa Mitra Kitrei Mitrei. So here is another statement of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says that if you have a strong wind that follows the rain, then it's just like rain. In other words, he disagrees obviously with the previous sentiment, because he feels that this too will be beneficial. So he says that it will bring just as much benefit, or will bring benefit just like rain itself. Shimsha, excuse me, Ivo de Bosa Mitra, or if you have a cloud which follows the rain, then that also will be as beneficial as Kemitra, like rain. Shimsha de Bosa Mitra, if the sun shines after rain, that too will be as beneficial, but you know how much? Kitrei Mitrei. It'll be even more beneficial because it has the value of two rainfalls. In other words, sun is very good for the earth, for the vegetation, and so on. And so, therefore, sunshine after rain, it's as though it's twice the benefit, because the rain is beneficial and the sun after it is also beneficial. So they say the Miyute Mai, this is the case, then what does it exclude? When is it that this is not of a benefit? To what we said before, that a strong wind is not beneficial, and here he says that it is beneficial. So he says, the Miyute Gilhei Delaila Vishimsho Devenikarche. He says, when do we see that it's not beneficial? So the first one is Gilhei Delaila. Gilhei Delaila, this is explained by Tosfos. He says, Zerichas HaLaila Shekorin Linesur Belaz. Alright, or as Rashi says, we take a look, he uses the word, take a look, Gilhei Delaila, he says, Islustra Belaz, which means, you know, like, it's lit up.
Lit up.
Yeah, like the word illustrate, or illustration, or illumination, or something like that. That's what he means, okay?
Could he be talking about lightning and thunder?
That's exactly what he's talking about over here, because this is what Rabbeinu Gershon says.
Uh-huh.
He translates it as Borok. You know, you have these different commentaries on the page, so you have to know how to read Rashi and this and that in order to see how each rabbi or how each commentator approaches it. And he says this means exactly what you said. It's the lightning, the flashing of light that we have at night. In other words, the lightning, this doesn't bring any benefit, okay? And likewise, he says, when is sunshine not good? He says, this is when you have sunshine, the bene karcha, between literally baldness. What does he mean by baldness? What he means is that you have clouds, but there isn't enough sun coming in. It's like patches. As Rashi says, it's like a bald person. He has a hair here, then nothing there, and then it has another hair over here, and so on. So the same thing, while there is a little bit sunshine, but it's not beneficial because it's being clouded over by the other clouds. So that is what will not bring benefit. All right, so far we've talked about rain being beneficial. We've talked about winds may or may not be beneficial, depending upon whether they are gentle winds or not. We've talked about clouds that could be beneficial. And we've also talked now about winds. Well, I mentioned one already. Yeah. All right. Yes, and the sunshine could also be beneficial, but there are times when it may not be beneficial. All right. So, Omar Rava. Rava now speaks about something else. This is the sun, the snow. After all, we're now living with snow this week, so we see. He says, Male talgol ture kechamisho mitre la'ara. He says that the snow is as beneficial to the mountains as five rainfalls on the earth. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, and he bases it upon a verse in the book of Job, where it says, Ki lasheleg yomar, because God says to the snow, Heve eretz, which means be on the earth, in other words, come down to the earth, right? The geshem, motor, the geshem mitros uzo. And the rain or the shower of rain and the shower of heavy rain, this demonstrates God's power. Okay? So, how many references do we have to the word rain? The first pasuk, the first part of the pasuk speaks about snow, right? Mm-hmm. And then it says geshem, motor, geshem, and mitros. Okay? Now, mitros being a plural form, therefore it means like two motors, right? Two rains, and geshem is a three, and motor of a geshem. So in other words, we have altogether five mentions. Mm-hmm. It's on this basis that he says then that the snow and the mountains is as beneficial to it as five rainfalls upon the earth. Now Rashi also explains something else. The reason is, let's take a look at the Rashi for a moment. Okay, the Rashi would start six lines from the bottom over here. Mm-hmm. Middle over there. Mm-hmm. Okay, where it says Bale Talgalaturi, right? Which means that the snow is good mm-hmm. for the mountains.
Yeah.
He says, Vakol Shekein Labika, of course the snow is not only good for the mountains, but it's also good for the valleys as well. So in that case, why does he mention the snow? Elo horim, but says Rashi, mountains ain lahem geshamim, right? They do not have rain in the sense that the rain doesn't stay upon the mountains. This is what he means. Elo shelik, but rather what we see among the mountains is snow. Shehag shamim yordim lamata, because the rain goes down, that's where it goes to the earth. The eno hor shosamehen, and the mountain does not drink in any water from the rain. But it does, out. Right, because it's all drained. But it does get benefit from the snow. The old, and furthermore he says, Shelek Sheva Mokim Nomes. Why does he mention snow on the mountains? Not only because, you know, the mountains can retain snow over a period of time, but also when snow goes down in the valleys, then Nomes Maholech, Bipneachom Shesholecham, that melts away because of the heat that we find down in the valleys, and it becomes kamayim, it becomes like water. Kamayim hu avol behorim korir shelik. But when the water remains on the mountain tops in the form of snow, this is what we mean by snow. So that therefore, this is the reason why he says that it is as beneficial to the mountainous areas as rain is. Of course, we all know. I mean that we, for our water, we do depend upon the snow, you know, melting in the spring and so on, the runoff, and this is part of the reason why we have the rivers and the other sources of water that are useful to us.
Standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Omar Rav.
Okay.
Rav said, Talgala Ture, Mitra Razia Li Ilone, and Mitra Nicha Lepere. Rather than saying over here that talga l'ture, in other words, snow is good for mountains. We already said that, right?
Right.
And mitra razio l'iloni says that strong rains, heavy rain, this is good for trees. Mitra nicho, but if you have a nice gentle rain, so this is the pere. This is good for fruits, but as Rashi explains, he means not just fruit, but he means in general for the grain that grows and everything else. In other words, the earth itself produces, you know, because of the benefits of gentle rain, not because of heavy rain. Heavy rain, we know. I mean, we've seen, for example, the times when we were dying for rain, let's say, for our lawns, for our gardens and everything else. And when it's a nice, decent rain, we know that the ground is benefiting for it. But how many times have we seen a heavy rain where it all goes into the sewer, and the ground itself, I mean, doesn't benefit from it? So it's good for different things. That, he says, a heavy rain is good for trees, because the trees can absorb it better. But the ground needs gentle rain. Or pila, which means a very, very thin kind of a rain. And this is how Rashi understands it. So he says, apila part sido de tuse kolomahanile. He says, that's good even for a seed, part seed over here means a seed, which is underneath a clod of earth. It's helpful for it. Why? Because when you have a nice, gentle, very thin rain, it will penetrate the cracks of the ground and fructify the seeds underneath it. So it's very good. And now they say, well, what is the meaning of the word upilo? Ayupilo? What do we mean by upilo? So he gives a translation. He says, upilo, this is derived from two words. One is uru, and the other is pile. Uru, of course, we recognize it means wake up. Okay? And what is pile? So pile says those are cracks in the ground. So in other words, it awakens, it stirs up the cracks in the ground in order to fructify. Okay, this is God's fine. And I'm very happy with Rashi's interpretation. And of course, Tosfos agrees with him. Says Ma'oraron, take a look at Tosfos over there, the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we may as well do both Tosfos. Why should I slight one Tosfos? The two of them. They're both very short. All right, so the first Tosfos over there, Upilo. He says, Hainu Geshem Dark, he explains this means a thin rain. Afilu Parsido, the Tusik Kolomanya. So that's good even for a seed which is underneath the clod of earth. And Perish Parsido, so he explains, what do we mean by the word Parsido? He says, Zugarin. This is a seed. Garin is the common word for a seed in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're addicted to eating pumpkin seeds, in which case garinim are the seeds that you take in your mouth and you crack them, and then you spit them out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a favorite dish among Spartans.
Yeah,
okay.
You eat part of the seed.
Yeah, they call them garinim, okay. But garin in general means seed, okay. So, he explains that Patsida means Gabriel, the seed, Shehumetachas, so Evan, underneath the stone. He translates Kol over here as if it were underneath the stone. Hainu Kemochito, he says, and that's just like wheat, Shehumetachas HaKarka, underneath. The point is that it is, you know, it enables that seed to begin to become fruitful and to sprout.
Germinate.
Right, to germinate, exactly. Thank you. My Upila, so he says, Urupili. It means perish. It says ma'oraron matzmichon. It causes them to awaken or to stir, right? To stir away and to cause them to grow. Pile says, what does pile mean? It says perish osan ha'omdim besit keoris. It means those who are standing in the cracks of the earth. I think, first of all, I have to tell you, from the point of view of the philology over here, you know, the words, what do they mean? They associate over here the word phile with the word feel in French, F-I-L-E, which has different meanings, but one of them is like the English word in file, like, you know, soldiers stand
in line
in file, okay? So that, in other words, he's saying that they're standing like a bunch, you know, the seeds are lined up just waiting, you know, for the rain to come and to wake them up. However, I also have to tell you that in Greek, the word phile means something a little bit different. This is, in English, we would spell the equivalent P-Y-L-E. Right, like in pylon and things like that. The meaning of the word in Greek, however, means gate. I mean, we use the word pylon, but originally the meaning is gate, okay? So
pylon,
in other words, it's like you are stirring up the gates of the ground, in other words, you know, to enter into it. So that means all gates of the ground or furrows on the ground, you know, awaken, okay? Awaken because of the rain. So, all right. Rashi was not a great Greek student, I have to say, but he knew Gemara infinitely more than I do.
What's the expression, David?
Wait.
Yes.
Give me a minute here.
Yes.
Rashi.
Frank
Nishkin.
Frank Nishkin.
That's right.
Okay. So you don't ask any questions. Exactly. Okay. Very good. Rashi gives, by the way, a slightly different translation. If you take a look on the Urim Thule over there, the third line of Rashi. He says, she's so same Sidke Horace. The first translation that they give is that it, like, closes up the cracks in the ground. In other words, when the rain comes, so it, you know, it causes it to close up. But then he says, Lishlach Rinov, or another explanation, Lishanagadelus Matsmachis Hagarin, you know, as we said before. All right. So now that we have the benefits of a nice, gentle rain, even what did Shakespeare say? quality of mercy is not strange. It droppeth.
Like the gentle rain.
Gentle rain from heaven, right?
On the earth.
So this is the gentle rain from heaven, okay? Viyoma Rava, and inasmuch as Rava is already talking about the benefits of snow and rain and gentle rain, so he has another good word, so to speak, okay? Viyoma Rava. Rava says, Haitsuva mirabonon domi lefart sido de tusekon. He says that a tzuva merabona, tzuva merabona means a young shoot among the rabbis. What he means is it's a young Torah scholar. This is the meaning. This is how we understand the expression, tzuva de rabona. Okay? So he says he is similar also to a grain, that is to a seed underneath the clod of ground. The cave in the novat, novat, because once he starts in to blossom, so he continues blossoming. In other words, he keeps on growing and growing. He starts off young, inexperienced, but the more Torah that he immerses himself in, then it's like the seed becomes awakened and grows into a beautiful plant. This is the imagery.
Very nice. Huh?
Yeah. And again, let's take a look for a moment at Rashi. Okay, first of all, he wants to explain what do we mean by tzuva mirabon. He says this is bochor chari. This is a sharp young man, right? Kemo beyed tzribon. Even like in the Gemara and Beitzo, they speak about eggs which are being becoming like spiced up or something like that. So it's the same thing. These young strahlers, you know, are like sharp eggs, so to speak, okay? Talmud Chacham Zokain, and then Rashi continues, it says, an old Talmud Chacham, loikori tzuva, they will not use the expression tzuva for them, ela hahume rabbonon, but rather he says, you know, one of the rabbis correlate this, so that we know that this is to differentiate the young, who are first gaining their experience from the older, who, you know, already had many, many years of Torah learning. And then came in the Novat Novat, so she must kill the Vatsbates, the La Alois. He says, once he starts in to germinate and to rise, you know, to grow, so Ola Labala, then he keeps on growing higher and higher. Kach Talmud Chacham, so likewise, Talmud Chacham came in Sheyotza, once he gets out, so to speak, from the earth, in other words, once he begins, you know, to be able to reason for himself and to shine in giving Torah, words of Torah. So Shmo Holech Begodei Labala, then his name, his reputation keeps on getting higher and higher and higher. Okay, getting back again to the Tzuva Barabonon, the Yomar Rova, and another thing that Rova said concerning the tzuva de marabonon, the young rabbis, the young Torah scholars, it says, "Hai tzuva mirabonon de rosach." If he becomes angry, literally he boils over. So orayisahu de kor veotachole. It's not because he is short-tempered, but it is because the Torah itself in him is so fiery that, you know, he wants to express it. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, pasuk in Prophet Yirmiyahu, it says, "Hello." Is not my word even like fire, saith the Lord. So in other words, when we are so full of enthusiasm because we have studied the word of God, then in that particular case we know that this is the reason why. It's not anger for the sake of anger, but what it means is enthusiasm for the teachings of the Torah. And again, we'll take a look at the Rashi with his comment over here. Arise from Atachas Lo, you know that the Torah is burning within him, so to speak. Sheyeshlo Rochav Lev Betok Torasol. His heart becomes exalted because of his Torah. Umeisim the Libo Yosim Shobinon. And he takes the words of God to his heart more than the ordinary person. In other words, he has a tendency then to take more seriously the teachings than the average person, you know, who's not immersed in Torah study. Okay? The Kamashwalon, and from this we learn the Chayovin Ladunun Chavschus, that you have to judge him favorably, not, you know, to become upset with him because he's angry, but you have to learn to look and see what is the reason why he becomes so aroused. Okay?
What is the word schus?
Zechus means merit. The lamed schus, you have to judge him favorably. Literally, you have to learn, teach, you have to be able to judge him with merit. Okay? Yeah. Okay. It's based upon imagery that we find, you know, in various places in the Talmud. We find the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, for example, and Maimonides quotes it too, that we are to consider ourselves, picture ourselves as if the world itself consists of a balance, okay? And the balance has two kapayim, okay?
Okay.
This calf and this one. All right. So we know there. It could be balanced l'tova, or it could be balanced l'ra. Right. You know, whichever one is the one that ultimately is the one that is the determining factor. So that l'dunu l'chaf schus means literally to judge him on the balance scale of merit, rather than the opposite, you know, of
right.
Feeling that he's bad or something like that. Yeah. And then, you know, we simply don't bother to use the word l'chaf anymore. It simply becomes the lamed schus on someone. So that, for example, since we're talking about Sanhedrin this morning, procedures, okay? All right. The judges, when they hear the evidence, they have the obligation either to be melamed schus if they can, you know, to find merit, you know, for this particular person, whatever he's doing, and try to judge him favorably. Or if the person, you know, is absolutely guilty, then of course they have to be melamed chova, which would be the opposite of that, okay? Melamed chova, to condemn that particular person because, you know, of his evil ways, or the evil deed that he did, whatever he did. All right. Now, the Yomar Rav Ashi said, "Kol Talmud Chacham Sheinu Kosher Kabazel Leader Talmud Chacham." He says that a Talmud Chacham who is not as hard as iron is not a true Talmud Chacham. In other words, there is a certain amount of consistency and stubbornness that a Talmud Chacham has to have and not yield to everything. He has to be able, you know, to stand firm in his convictions, stand firm in what he believes in, and be able to defend it, you see. Otherwise, he's not a true Talmud Chacham. Shenemar, again, he quotes a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, which says, "Uchefatish yefotzei tzela." He has to be even like a hammer that can smash to pieces a rock. That's how firm he has to be. Omale Rabbi Abba Rabashi. So Rabbi Abba said to Rabashi, he said to him, "Atun mehotzim asnis today." You learn it from that pasuk. Anam, we learn the same lesson. We learn it from here. Yechsev, as it's written, and this, of course, is a pasuk that we find in the book of Deuteronomy. It says, "Eretz asher avodeha barzel," a land where its stones are iron. So he says, "Al tikrei avoneho," don't interpret the, in this case literally as its stones, but ela boneo, but rather those who built it. Of course, that reminds us, you know, of what we had at the end of Brachos, and that we say all the time, you know, al tikrei bonaya chelo bonaim, right? In other words, that not just your children, but they are also your builders. So that the Talmud Chacham is also, he is the builder. And therefore, he has to be also like barzel, like iron. Omar Avinu, Apilo Hocho, nevertheless, alright, we're good. So we say a person should be stubborn. A person, you know, sometimes has to be, is even liable, you know, to become angry. But Apilo Hocho, nevertheless, he says, in spite of it all, a person should train his soul that he should be gentle, that he should be kind and nice and so on to people. In other words, with all the in spite of the fact that sometimes it was a place for anger and for stubbornness, but nevertheless, it's not necessarily the best kind of human character either. You have to train yourself how to overcome anger, how to overcome stubbornness, and learn how to get along well with other people, have consideration for other people. So this is what he says, that a person must to train his soul, that he should be noach labrio, so to speak, he should be gentle. Shenemar, and the pasuk is, v'hosir katz b'libech. Shlomo HaMelech tells us in the book of Geheles, remove anger from your heart. Omer Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer Rav Yonason, Shmuel bar Nachmeni, he said in the name of Rav Yonason, he said, Shlosha Shalu Shalho Kehogen, there were three people that we find in the Bible who asked a favor of God, but they didn't ask the right thing of him when they begged God for this particular favor. So, the Shnayim Heshivuhu Kehogen, two of them were answered by God, nevertheless, favorably, so to speak, as you know, that they should have been, and Li'echad Heshivuhu Kehogen, and one was answered not the way it was right to answer. The Elohim, who were the three that we're talking about? So, one is Eliezer Eved Avraham, Eliezer who was a servant of Avraham, right? The Shoel ben Kish, and the second one is Saul, the son of Kish. In other words, he was the first king of Israel, right? The Yiftach HaGidoti, and Jephthah, who came from Gilead. All right, now what did each of them ask, and what was the answer given to their petition? So Eliezer Eved Avraham, how do we know that he didn't ask the right favor of God? Yitzir, the pasuk says that Eliezer prayed as follows. He says, and it shall be that the maiden, Asher Omari Leho, to whom I will say, Hatino Kadeh, please take your pitcher, you know, and give me water. Remember?
Right.
And what did he say? The rest of it is left out, but she is the one who's going to be the wife of
my master.
Right? Okay. So, the point is, all that he said is that the girl who I say is, how do we know that she would be the right one? Yochol, it's possible that afilu chigeres, I mean, that maybe she would be a girl who limps, or afilu sumo, maybe she would be a girl who is blind. How did he know who was going to be the first one to offer a pitcher of water to him? But nevertheless, Hashivo Kahogan, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam answered him properly, answered his prayers properly, the Nizdam Nalo Rivka. And of course, who was the girl who came along?
Okay.
It was Rivka, Rebecca. All right. Now, what about Shaul Ben Kish? What did he ask?
Dr. Miller.
Yes.
In that case, though, wasn't he asking for just an indication of who the girl would be rather than a description of what the girl should be? In other words, he was saying, God's going to choose somebody.
Right.
Just give me a sign so I recognize
him. Right, right. Correct. But the point is that, you know, just judging from the words itself, all that he said is that, you know, if she takes a pitcher and she says, drink my Lord, then I know, he says, that she is the one that has been appointed by God for the son of my master. Okay?
Right.
I'm quoting directly, you know, what it says over there. But the point that they're making is, he should have prayed for someone not, you know, that he should have.
That was worthy.
Let's say, right, someone who is worthy to be a wife to Isaac, not, you know, something in the general, that if some girl comes along and gives me a pitcher of water, then she's the one. You understand?
Yeah.
So that's why they say, how did he know? I mean, who was going to come along? She might have been lame, she might have been blind, but the Rabbeinu Shalom nevertheless granted the prayer and gave. And as a result, Rivka was the one who came along. All right. Now, how about Shaul ben Kish, who was the first king of Israel? All right. Now, here, this goes back to a very famous episode in the life of Saul, and one of the first mentions that we have of David. And of course, what was it? The battle against Goliath. Remember that incident?
Yeah, vaguely.
Okay, vaguely. All right. If you remember, Goliath, you know, was this great big giant, and he challenged the Jewish people, and he said, go ahead. Who among you, you know, is man enough, you know, to go and fight against me? And of course, they're all cowed. So then, what happened? So King Saul says as follows. It's it. The pasuk says, "V'ho'yoha ish asher yakenu." So King Saul makes a promise. He says, "The man who will smite him, Yashvenu Hamelech Osher Godol, then the king will make him very, very rich. In other words, he'll give him great riches. The Yezbito Yitainlo, and also he will give his daughter unto him as a wife." Okay. So again, they say, "Yochol Afilo Evid Afilo Mamzer." You mean to say anybody would do it, even if he were a slave, or even if he were a mamzer, you know, a bastard, would he think of giving his daughter to him and making this man rich? But nevertheless, Heshivo Kahogan, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam answered his prayer also, that it turned out to be favorably. V'nizdamin lo David, and who came along? It was David. Okay, so that David was the lucky person, and he was the one who slew Goliath, and as a result he got the king's daughter, and obviously probably Saul also followed through on a big nadan as well. Okay, he gave him a big dowry. Okay.
Gave him the kingdom.
Right. Well, he didn't give him the kingdom. If you remember, Saul became extremely jealous of the popularity of David afterwards, and as a result he wanted to kill him, and he devised all kinds of plots to assassinate David. Saul was unfortunately stricken with tremendous jealousy. So that he was a man, you know, who started off his kingdom on the right foot, but afterwards, you know, he had one adversity after another. And unfortunately, it affected his mind and became subject to melancholy and everything else. Okay, now who is the third character who asked God for something? This was, of course, Yiftach HaGilad, right? Jephthah from Gilead. Dichsiv, and what did he say? What did he ask God? He got, you know, he wanted victory from God, and then he made a promise. And what was the promise? He said, "V'hoyo ha'yotze asher yetze medalsi beisi," and will come to pass that whoever will go out of the doors of my home, in other words, whoever first comes out of my house, by the way, the Hebrew says ha'yotze, which could mean a person who comes out, could be an animal that comes out. All it means is that comes out, shall come to pass, that which comes out. So we don't know what it is. And Yochol, so that's why they say, look, it's possible that Afilo Dober Tome, some unclean thing might have come out of the house. Let's say the dog first came out. Was he going to offer up the dog as a sacrifice? Or some other animal or something like that, that came out. Naturally, he had not reckoned on what?
His daughter.
That it would be his daughter to come out. Right. So Heshivo Shaloka Hogan, as a result, God did not answer him properly, but Nizdam Nalo Bito, it was Jephthah's own daughter, you know, who came out first. Now, behind the Ka'amri Lahu Dovil Yisrael, and this explains a pasuk, and that the prophet, in this case it's the prophet Jeremiah, said to the people of Israel when he said, "Hatzori ein beGilad, is there no balm in Gilead? Im rofe ein sham? Is there no physician there? Is there no healer over there?" I'll stop at this point for a moment, because let's understand what is the business with Yiftach. Okay? With Yiftach, he wasn't thinking, number one. But secondly, all right, his daughter came out. Who said that Yiftach had to sacrifice her? You understand? He should have gone to the Chochem Shebador, in other words, who was the Torah scholar in that generation, who happened to be Eliezer the high priest, and gone and discussed it with him, and Eliezer would have told him that there is no human sacrifice. You do not sacrifice a human being, your daughter or whoever it may be, but, you know, a vow is no vow. It doesn't mean anything. You don't even need absolution. Or if you want, I'll absolve you from the vow. But the point is, he should have consulted with him. He didn't. Now, what was her fate? We have different explanations as to what her fate was. because she said, she begs that she should go up to the mountains with the her girlfriends, and she would stay there, and she would weep about the fact that she never would be able to marry, and so on. So it doesn't say actually that he killed her, but it may be either that he followed through on his stupid vow and killed her, or it may be, you know, simply that for the rest of her life she was like confined, you know, where she was never able to associate again with other people and so on, which would be like a living death in her case. At any rate, it was absolutely wrong. So it teaches us, of course, the importance of not making any rash vows, something that we shouldn't do. But at the same time, our sages also tell us that, on the other hand, Eliezer also should have shown greater understanding, that he should not have said, I'll wait for Yiftach to come to me before I do anything. He should have gone to Yiftach as soon as he heard about Yiftach's vow and gone to him and told him, you know, that it was wrong. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people suffered precisely because each leader felt that he was too important, you know, to consult the other leader, so that the result, the people suffered. Now, sorry, yes. Yes.
No one knows how the God is made.
The meaning of what Yirmiyahu, you know, was talking about when he used this. What Yirmiyahu was saying is, you know, is there no balm in Gilead? Because Gilead was known for its the balsam trees that produced the sap, which became used as balm, right? And Imrofe and Shom, is there nobody to heal? Because Madua lo yosa ruchas basami is the rest of the pasuk over there, which means why has no healing taken place for the daughter of my people? In other words, the people of Israel are suffering, and yet there's no one to console them, to heal them, or anything like that. But what the Gemara here is doing is to take the same pasuk, in other words, Hatzarien begidot, to say, is there no balm in Gilead? Meaning Yiftach hagiladi. What's the matter with him? Doesn't he know that there is something that can be done, you know, in view of the fact that he made a stupid vow? Rofein Shom, and is there no healer? Meaning, and where is Eliezer, the man who should have served, you know, as the
straighten them out.
To straighten them out and so on? Why don't we have these people? Okay. And now we have a continuation of the same thought. There's a pasuk that says, again, that, you know, Yirmiyahu says that, it says, God reproves the people of Israel for doing things, which I have not commanded, nor have I stated this, or it never even entered my mind. This is the case of Zebino Shomesha Melech Moab, the case of the son of Mesha, the king of Moab. Shenemar, as it is written, and this is an incident that we read about in 2 Kings, there was a war between the kingdom of Yehuda and the kingdom of Moab, and Mesha saw that he was losing the battle, and what did he do in order to bring about victory? So it says, Vayikach es beno habechor, he took his firstborn son, Asher Yimloch Tachtov, who would have reigned after him, Vayalehu Ola, and he offered him up as a sacrifice. Naturally, to whom did he offer him up as a sacrifice? He offered him up as a sacrifice to Baal, because, you know, this was his religion. And in the worship of Baal, they would offer up children as living sacrifices. Okay? Mm-hmm. So this is what he did. Well, this so scandalized the people of, you know, the Jewish army, that they became terrified at the sight of such a thing, and as a result they retreated, and so Mesha was able to save his nation at that time. And incidentally, one of the archaeological discoveries that we have is what we call the stone of Mesha, king of Moab, written in the old Canaanite script, but in a language which is fairly close to Hebrew, because they spoke a language also, you know, which was, let's say, like a first cousin of Hebrew or something like that. Yeah. So that you could understand some of it very easily, you know. But, you know, what does he say? He doesn't tell the fact that he offered up his son. That we have to go to the Bible to find out that this is what he did. But he boasts about the fact, you know, that he destroyed Israel and, you know, he beat them. And as a result, Israel is now subject to him and things like that, you know. It's like we have Egyptian steels also, where they don't mention, I mean, all that they do, Pharaoh mentions the fact that he destroyed Israel. Israel is no more. We have such a stone that they found, you know. It says, Israel is no more. Okay, no, so thank God Israel is still around. Even the Pharaoh is no more.
I'm your soul,
right, right. They found it in the capital city of Moab. Ir Moab, yeah, that's what it's called. Or sometimes they call it Or, Ir Moab, yeah, yeah. This was his capital. Yeah, right, we'll be in that general area, exactly, yeah. So, this is one of the interesting things that we found from antiquity. All right, so at any rate, he offered up his, you know, his, but as Rashi says that his intention, well, he sacrificed to Baal, but in reality, what he had in mind is, you know, that this would be an offering to God. Do you understand? It wasn't that he was fighting our God. He wasn't fighting Hashem. Mm-hmm. But he was doing it thinking that he would be propitiating Hashem by offering up his son. So that, see, would explain why then that Asher Lo Tzivisi, which I did not command, would refer then to the son of, you know, would refer to Mesha, the king of Moab, who sacrificed, because he thought that maybe God commands human sacrifices. But in reality, Asher Lo Tzivisi, God has never commanded human sacrifice. Okay. Next. Velo Dibarti, what I never said, Zayiftach, as we already explained, you know. God never said that, you know, that a human being should be ever sacrificed as a sacrifice. Never. So that Yiftach was all wrong, and what he should have done, you know, was to consult. Now, what's interesting is, well, they also alibi, and this never entered my heart, literally. Literally never went up on my heart. In other words, I never even considered it. And who is this referring to? Ze Yitzchak ben Abraham. This is Isaac, the son of Abraham. Now, what is the meaning of this? The meaning of this is that even though God tells Abraham, you know, Kachno es Pinchos, right, take your son, your only son, and, you know, Halehu, Olot, so on and so forth. But in reality, God never even entertained the idea that Isaac would ever be sacrificed. So that therefore, Vashali Osa Alibi, this refers to Isaac, because God never even had the thought that Isaac should be sacrificed to him. It was, of course, what? A test of Abraham's loyalty.
But he did still, he still asked him to go. And
yes, right, right. So it was a test of Abraham's loyalty to the word of God. But God never had the intention that Abraham should go through with the sacrifice of Isaac. Yeah. Omer Rabbi Berechia. Rabbi Berechia said, "Apnes Yisrael shalosh al dehogen." The literally the congregation of Israel, in other words, meaning the Jewish people, also asked something of God which was not the right thing to ask. And the Holy One, blessed be He, answered her prayer the right way. In other words, God knew and He answered it favorably. Shenema. Pasuk says in the prophet Hosea that the people of Israel say, Veneda or, let us know, near the full Adas, let us pursue to know as Hashem, Keshachar Nochon, even as even as the morning comes assuredly, Yavo begeshem lano, and let him come kegeshem. He said, let him come even as rain unto us. All right. So in other words, the people want proof. You know that they want the knowledge of God to be proven to them, to know that God really is steadfast, even as, you know, let's say that the light is, the morning star, the morning comes, and even like rain. So Amad HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Holy One said unto the Knesset Israel and to the congregation, to the community of Israel, he said, Biti, my daughter, Ad Sharel is Davo Shepomim Mispakesh, Pomim Enum Mispakesh. You're asking for something that at times should be asked for and sometimes should not be asked for, namely rain. There are times when rain is good, but there are also times when if you have rain and rain and rain and rain, we know it's not good, okay? So sometimes it's something that we should be asking for, and sometimes it's something we should not be asking for. That I will be unto you even as something which always is sought after. Shenemar, even as the Pasuk says, and also the Prophet Hosea, he says, I will be like dew to Israel. Now dew is always good. Rain may at times be injurious. With all the good things that we said about rain, but nevertheless could also bring injury. On the other hand, dew always is a blessing. So I will be like dew unto Israel. So this is how God answered her prayer. Another prayer that the people of Israel asked, which was not the right way they should have phrased it. Omer Lefanov, the Knesset Israel, said before the God, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Simeni Kachosam Alibecho, Kachosam Alzurecho. This we find in the last chapter of Shir Hashirim, where he says, make me even like a seal upon your heart, even like a seal on your arm. Omer Le'Akadosh Baruch Hu. So the Holy One said unto Knesset Israel, he said, Biti, my daughter, you're asking for something. Sometimes it can be seen, sometimes it can't be seen. In other words, you asked me that I should carry you like a seal on my hand and on my heart, which would mean what? That I should always have you in mind, but these seals are at times covered and sometimes not, is what he says. Sometimes, Shepomim Nira, times it can be seen and from Eidon Nira. So, you don't want me to make you like a seal which cannot be seen. Avolaniyeh Seloch, but I will make for you Dovo Shenira Le'olam, something which can always be seen. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, it's from the prophet Yeshayahu, which says, Hein al kapayim chakosich. Behold, I have engraved you even upon my palms. Palms of the hand can always be seen. So the Rabbeinu Shalom figuratively says, I have engraved you upon my hand so that every time I look at my hands, I will always remember you. Okay? Naturally, we have to understand that this is a little bit anthropomorphic, as we would say. In other words, we're picturing God in human terms, but we understand what the meaning is. The meaning is that God will always be mindful of us. Now, Rashi, besides giving the Pshat, he gives also a shtickle drash, as we would say. He also gives a little, a figurative interpretation by saying that kapayim, this refers also to the skies. In other words, as if to say, and this is based upon a statement that we have elsewhere in the Talmud, that there is, so to speak, just as we have Yerushalayim Shel Mata, we have a Jerusalem on the earth, so we have also a Yerushalayim Shel Mata. We have a heavenly Jerusalem. Rabbeinu Shel Olam has in the sky, in the heavens, he has like a copy of the Jerusalem. This is the celestial Jerusalem. So that this is what he's referring to, according to Rashi, when he says, Hinam Kapayim HaKosif, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in his heavenly abode always has a picture of Tzion, because this is what the prophet is talking about in that chapter. Atomer Tzion Azavani Hashem, this is what the prophet says, right? Zion complains that God has forsaken me, but God has said, not only have I never forsaken you, but Heinal Kapayim Chakosich Chomosayach Negdi Tomit, I always bear the picture of you before me. Your walls are always there before me, and so on, and your children will return unto you. Very beautiful passage from the prophet Isaiah. All right, I'll do a tiny bit more, about another 5 minutes, and then we'll call an evening. because I want to get to the top of the next page, okay? All right, so now we come back to the original Mishnah, which says, Ein Shodin Sakshomim, that we do not begin to pray for rain, right? Ela Somach Lakshom. This is the rest of the quotation, but at a time when it is already almost time for the rain to fall. Svaruha. So now, the question that the Gemara asks is, there are those rabbis, there are those teachers who thought that She'elo v'hatzkora chadamilzehi, that asking God for rain and the mentioning of the Mashiv HaRuach, it's the same thing. In other words, that both Mashiv HaRuach and also, you know, Talamata should be said right close to the rainy season. Okay? Mantana, so who is the authority who says so? So Omar Rava says, Rabbi Yoshehi. He says, this is the view which fits, you know, what we've already learned about Rabbi Yoshua's opinion. What did Rabbi Yoshua say at the beginning? He said, when do they begin to say Mashiv HaRuach?
I don't remember.
He says it's on the last day of the holiday, okay? Which we interpreted how as meaning Shmini Atzeres. But we've also had another thing that was already quoted, and that they're about to quote once more to remind us. Namely, he also says that you begin saying it Mishas Hanochaso.
You say it
when you lay the lulav down. Right, when you no longer use the little, this is when you say it. Okay. All right. And that's what they quote now. So Omar Rabbi says, this is Rabbi Yeshua. This must be the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. The Omar who said Mishas Hanochaso, that we begin saying it at the time when we put down the lulav, right? Because we discussed another problem previously where they said that maybe according to Rabbi Yehoshua's system, the Nisach HaMayim would be for 2 days, which would mean then that if that's the case, that they should be saying it on the seventh day of Sukkot and not the eighth day, okay? But forget about that now. It was suggested as an alternative point of view, but now we come back again to the meat and potatoes point of view. And the meat and potatoes point of view is that when we put down the lulav. Now we know, what does he mean when we put down the lulav? Naturally, he doesn't mean in the morning and then you immediately start to say talavata. I mean, Mashiv HaRuach. What he means is, because the seventh day, any time during the day, is still proper. Let's say that you didn't do it in the morning. Can you still bench lulav and esrig, let's say in the afternoon? Yes. The answer is yes. It's only during the night you're not allowed to. But we learned that any time during the day is kosher for the bracha. So that therefore, Mishas HaNochaso means it could be the seventh day is literally the day upon which we can still make the bracha for the lulav, so that Mishas HaNochaso, when do we no longer use a lulav in an esrig? When do we put it down so it's no longer in use? The answer is on Shmini Atzeres, when the law of the lulav and the esrig no longer applies. Okay? Omele Abaye, so Abaye disagreed with Rava. He says, Afilu Tamar. No, he says, you know what? You could say Rabbi Eliezer. You may say that the Mishnah agrees with Rabbi Eliezer. Why? Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, She'elo Lechud, the Hatzkor Lechud, there are two different things. She'elo, in other words, begging for rain. This is what we say, you know, we're saying Talamotu Levracha. This is one thing. And Hatzkorah, mentioning Mashiv HaRuach, is another thing. So that this point of view could also be sustained by Rabbi Eliezer. Even though he says that when should we begin saying Mashiv HaRuach on the second day of Yom Tov, if you remember, right? Yom Sheni Shel Chag, right? But nevertheless, as he said before, you know, when he was challenged in the Mishnah, he says, you know, when Rabbi Yeshua challenges him, he says, oh, I didn't mean that we begin saying, you know, that we begin asking for rain. All that I meant is that we begin mentioning that God is great and he has the power to give rain. That's all that I meant. Okay, we'll stop at this particular point. So we'll begin at the very bottom then of Dalet Omid Aleph. And next week, Mitzvah Shem, we shall continue. Okay, so next week, 7 o'clock again, we shall be learning. And listen, we're progressing.
So we're on,
we are now ready to Dalet Omid Beis, except that we have three words for another bottom. Okay. Okay, I just want to summarize very briefly what we learned last week. and then continue from our new starting point tonight, which is on Daf Hey, the new Mishnah that we have over there. And Daf Dalad, on the days, the discussion still continue about the relationship. When do you say Mashu Baruch? When do you say Talamotar? Okay? And we saw in that connection that there are still differences of opinion. As for example, one opinion says that you say Talamotar only up to Pesach, right? And we also learned that Mashu Baruch is also said only until the Musaf, at the beginning of the Chazan starts a Musaf on the first day of Pesach, so they no longer say Mashu Baruch. Okay. But nevertheless, there were other opinions. One opinion was that, for example, even though the Mishnah says that we no longer say Mashu Baruch after the first day of Pesach, but one opinion said that you should continue to say Talamotar until the end of Pesach. That's what we're talking about during the Vachadika days, you know, because on Shabbos, I mean on Yom Tov itself, it wouldn't be in place. But for the Chol HaMoed period, that they would still continue until the end of Pesach. Another opinion says that you do it actually until after the end of the month of Nisan, because after the month of Nisan, they said the chances of rain are no longer existent. So that we have these different opinions. There are also other problems. Problem was that, for example, we said that we begin saying Mashav HaRuach to the Musaf service of Shemini Atzeres. So then the question was asked that those of us who observe 2 days Yom Tov, of course they're talking about Babylonia, but it applies to us as well, what should we do? So there were differences of opinion. One opinion said, for example, you say it to Musaf and then you skip it to Mincha. Another opinion said you say it to Mincha, but then you skip it to Maariv of the next day, which of course is you know, what we would today call Simchas Torah, but in those days it didn't have that official name as yet. Okay, it was simply the next day. It was the second day observance of Shemini Atzeres. But again, the objection was that here you declare that the 8th day Shemini Atzeres is a Yom Tov. They have a Yom Tov Dikadavin, you say Mashu Baruch over there, and then, because you're in doubt as to whether it's really the 8th or the 7th day, because maybe it's only the 7th day, you know, this is what we call the Sefeka de Yoma, you know, the doubt that exists as the day, so you're going to start into make Yom Tov Vochadik, it's not right. So that finally they come to the conclusion to say that, and this is the last lines that we had on Hay just prior to the new Mishnah, it says that inasmuch as, okay, Ramnan said in the name of Rav, this is the fourth line on the page over there, Mona Esrim V'Yechod Yom, he counts 21 days beginning from the first day of the month of Tishrei, K'derech Shemona Es Asara Yomim Rosh Hashanah Ad Yom Kippur, even as he counts 10 days from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, Umatzchil, and he begins. Well, he begins Mashu Baruch. Of course, if you take that, what is the 21st day of Tishrei? That's what we call Shemini Atzeres. Okay, and then it says V'kevan Shehischil, and once he's begun saying Mashu Baruch, so Shuv Einu Posek, he no longer stops. In other words, it continues, and they don't go for this business. Don't say it to Mincha, or don't say it to Maariv, or something like that. Let's say it from this point on at all services. The Hilchos on the Halacha is that Kevan Shehischil Shuv Einu Posek. That once he's begun to say Mashu Baruch, then he doesn't stop saying. So, okay. So far we have determined, you know, that as far as Mashu Baruch is concerned, you begin saying it on Shemini Atzeres, and you stop on the first day of Pesach, and nobody questions that. But the question is still remains as to the varied opinions that we had concerning Talamotar. Opinion that we follow officially is that once Pesach begins, we no longer say it. And they interpret that, for example, that we had it on the previous page, but you know, those of you who were not here last week, you missed it. They said that we're supposed to stop at the time when the Korban Pesach is brought. Okay, now of course we don't bring Korban Pesach anymore today, But when was the time of the Korban Pesach? The answer is, it was slaughtered in the afternoon of the 14th. So that is the last time to recite Talamoder. And this is the opinion that we have adopted, and this is what we do. We know that once, Pesach sets in, we no longer have a Vachadik Shemen Esrei, and we no longer say Talamoder. But in the days of the Mishnah, when they were still debating this issue, of course, we already had questions as to when do you start. One said you start on the third day of Cheshvan. Another one says you start on the seventh day of Cheshvan. Why do you start on the seventh day of Cheshvan? In order to give a chance, to the people who were traveling, who were all regalim, right? They were pilgrims to be able to get back to the furthermost part from which they would come and not get caught in the rain. But we also saw that there were other opinions as to when to stop saying it besides, at the beginning of Pesach, the way we follow. Namely, till the end of Pesach, Achiyavur Pesach is one opinion, or Achiyavur Chodesh Nisan, until the time when the month of Nisan is over. So that was not resolved in the time in the Mishnah, and so they're still debating that particular issue. And this is what we're going to have this evening. But in reality, also, we're going to have a lot of very, very beautiful Agarata tonight. Okay? All right, so we start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Amosai Sholan Sakshomim, until what point do we still continue to say Talamotar? So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Achiyavur Pesach, until Pesach is over. That was already quoted before, but here was the official source, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Here is where the official mission is, which they are debating. Rabbi Meir Omer, he says, Acha Yetzei Nisan, until the end of Nisan. When Nisan is over, then you stop saying Shenemar, and he brings a pasuk, and the pasuk is Vayored Lochem Geshem Moreh Umalkosh Barisha. That the Novi, this happens to be a quotation taken from the prophet Joel. And we'll get back to that in just a few minutes. We'll see that in Joel's time, there had been drought and plagues of locusts, all different types of locusts came and attacked the crops and everything else. And therefore, as a sign of God's favor, it's written that Vayored Lochem Geshem, God brought down unto you, because a rain to fall. And what rain? It says Moreh. Of course, we take Rora usually in the sense of a teacher
right.
But here Mora is a synonym for Yoreh.
Oh.
We say Nishma Yisrael, right? Yoreh Malkosh. Yoreh we translate as being the first rain, or the former rain if you wish, and Malkosh being the latter rain, right? The later rain, okay? I use former latter only because that's the way the English translation runs, but in reality we have to understand it means either the early one or the later ones, okay? So, when did this happen? The Moreh Umalkosh. So Joel says it happened Borishon. And naturally, what is Borishon? That means in the first month. What is the first month of the biblical year?
Nisan.
So in other words, in the month of Nisan, there was rain. And about this, they now ask questions. So Amalei Rab Nachman Rab Yitzchok. So Rab Nachman said to Rab Yitzchok, he asked him a figure. What is the figure? He says, Yoreh ben Nisan. He says, how come the pasuk that Joel says that the Yoreh, notice again, Yoreh and Moreh mean the same thing over here, okay? That this happened in the month of Nisan. He says, the Otanya, didn't we learn, he says, that Yoreh v'mar Cheshvan, that the time of Yoreh is in the month of Cheshvan, right? Umalkosh, and the latter rain is Benisan. Is this also a common thing? Usually in Eretz Yisrael, if you go, you'll see that when do you have the first rains? So talk about the month of Cheshvan is the time when it happens. In other words, after Sukkot is over, Sukkot is after all, towards the end of Tishrei. So once Cheshvan begins, so you begin to have the rainy season in Israel. Assuming, of course, that there is a rainy season. Because some years, unfortunately, there's a drought.
What does Mar Cheshvan mean?
Mar Cheshvan is the real name of the month. That's the real name. For whatever reason it was, they dropped the Mar and they made it Cheshvan. Probably the basic reason why they dropped the Mar is because Mar, in Hebrew, suggests the word bitter. Yeah, it suggests it. So, you know, homiletically, he says, Hadrash, you know, is that why do they call Mar Cheshvan, the other way around, they say, why do they call Cheshvan Mar Cheshvan? Because this is the only month in the year in which there's no special day occurring. Okay? That's what they say. Of course, in biblical times there was. For example, when did the rain start at the time of Noah's flood? The answer was it was on the 17th. Yeah. Of course, I mean, we're talking about, you know, it's a depend. Our sages were a little bit also confused as to whether the months sometimes that they're referred to over here mean, let's say, Nisan and Iyar and so on, or does it mean Tishrei and Cheshvan? Because of the fact that there are two conflicting opinions as to when Rosh Hashanah was. Was Rosh Hashanah in Tishrei or was Rosh Hashanah in Nisan? Because, by the way, what Rosh Hashanah is today? Tonight, tomorrow?
For the trees,
right, okay. We know that the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says there are four Rosh Hashanahs during the course of the year. But even concerning, you know, Rosh Hashanah, when should be the official day, there was a difference of opinion. Naturally, we hold that it is the first day of Tishrei, but nevertheless, there was also an opinion that it was the first day of Nisan. So, if that's the case, then the second month...
The head of the year.
Yeah, right. So the question is then, when did the rain begin falling the days of Noah? Okay, but as I say, Cheshvan, we don't have any special days in our modern calendar today during the month of Cheshvan. Whereas Kislev, you have Chanukah, Tevis, so you have a fast day, Asara B'Tevis, and so on, right? And of course now in Shvat, we have Tu B'Shvat, you know, so that all the other months have special days that occur in them. But not the month of Cheshvan. So, as I say, that's homiletics. In reality, the Babylonian name was Mar Cheshvan, and therefore, this was really the name, and we find it in many books in the Bible that the month is referred to as Mar Cheshvan. Naturally, I'm talking about the later books of the Bible, when the Jews had already been exiled to Babylonia, come in contact over there, and so they had adopted the Babylonian names for the months. Because in the Bible, we find a few Hebrew names for the months, besides, you know, Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni, and so on and so forth. We find a few of them, but we don't have a complete listing of them. For example, Chodesh HaAviv, right, this would be the first month of the year. That's the spring, literally, okay? Or if you wish, Aviv also means that it's in the stalk. It's in, you know, the grain is now in the stalk or something. You can see it, okay? Or the flax, you know, is sprouting and so on. You have the word used in connection with the makas. The seventh makas, you know, whether the hail fell and so on. So the kapishto gibol asura aviv, that the barley was aviv. In other words, the barley was already in.
Sprouting?
Yeah, it was already sprouting. So, you know, that was hit by the hail.
Boom,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So, that's Aviv. And then you have, for example, Chodesh Ziv. Ziv is literally the month in which everything is shining. Now, this, of course, would be actually what we call today the month of Sivan. Okay. We know that the month in which Sukkot was celebrated was called Esanim. Yerach Esanim, or Chodesh Esanim, okay? That was the month of the Esanim.
And what is Esanim literally?
Esanim means the mighty ones. And as our sages interpreted, it was named after Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who were the mighty ones of our people, and so on. So, and of course, who was the very first one? Those Avraham, and therefore we have Piyutim, for example, that speak about Eson Hikir Boro. That, in other words, the Mighty One, meaning Avraham Avinu, was the first one to recognize his Creator. You know, so
the Hebrew reminds that we know it.
Right. The ones that we're familiar with were the
Babylonian names.
Right.
Not really.
Yeah. Right. All right. So much for that. Anyway. So, as we can see, the question is then, Yorah, you say, is in Nisan. Yorah belongs in the Cheshvan, right? Even as we learned, Yorah b'ma Cheshvan, right? Malkosh b'Nisan. So Omalei, so he answered him as follows. He said, Hochi Omar Rabbi Yochanan, and who does he quote? He quotes Rabbi Yochanan. He says, B'mei Yoel b'msuel, in the days of the prophet Joel, the son of Pesuel, Niskayim mikrozeh. This particular verse that we just mentioned in the Mishnah over here, right by Yor Lachem Geshem Urim Malkosh Barishon, that it happened in the first month, he says that's when that particular prophecy was fulfilled. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, Dichsiv Bey, as the Pasuk says concerning, you know, the situation then, it says, Yeser HaGozom Ochal HaArbe. The various types of locusts, you know, arba we're familiar with from the ten bakas, you know, right? And arba is locust. But there are also other kinds of different destructive pests. The cankerworm is usually a translation for the word gozom and so on. So in other words, whatever the cankerworm left over, so the locust came and ate up. All right, so this is what Joel is describing over here. So it says, Osar Shono, that particular year, Yotza Ador, Ador passed, Velo Yordu Geshomim, and no rain had fallen. Yordu Lehem Revior Ishoino Beyechel Benisan. When did the very first rain of that year occur? It occurred in the first day of Nisan, Shvedish Nisan, alright? So Omar Lehem, Novi Yisrael. So the prophet said to the Jewish people, he says, Tzu, go out, the zero, and cast your seed, plant your seed. So Amrulo, they said to him, Mishayeshlo kav chitim, the person has only one kav left of wheat. Kav is an old Greek measure, and of course it's used continually in the time of the Gemara. I mean, don't forget, Jews lived among goyim, and you know, they very often have, you know, cross cultural influences, one from another.
In the back here it says it's equal to 4 lugim.
Yeah.
Or what?
Lugim.
Yeah.
What's a lugim?
In a log, right. Log. Wow. It's equal to something like 4 rabbis.
A liquid measure equals the volume of 6 eggs.
Yeah, yeah, right. So, you know, it's not in there. There are books that have, you know, that contain the measurements of what these are. Needless to say, these are all approximate measurements.
They have them in the art school.
Yeah, art school has them.
The Mishnah.
Right.
No, the Mishnah.
Yeah,
right.
There's an index, a cluster of index.
Yeah. All right. So, they said to him, he says, if a person has only a kav of wheat, or kabayim seorim, or two kavim of oats, yochlenu, the Yichya, should he eat what he has and live, or Yisra'en of Yomus, or should he plant it and he will die? In other words, he's telling us to take whatever we have, and we have barely anything left, only a kav of wheat and two kav of the barley, and if we eat it up, maybe we could still be alive, but if we plant it, we certainly won't have to eat. So Omar Lehem, so he said to them, Afal Pichein, nevertheless, he says, so who is zero? Go out and plant. So Nasal Lehem Nais, a miracle occurred for them. Then Nizgal Lehem, and there was suddenly revealed unto them, Masha Bixolin, or Masha Bechoin Nemolim. Wheat and barley that had been hidden in the walls, naturally means in the cracks in the walls, and Rashi says these were cracks in the walls where the mice had put wheat in, had hidden it. Or wheat that they discovered in the ant holes.
Ant holes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, holes that, you know, they came and they carried it off and buried it underground. So Yotzu Vizoru, Sheni Ushlishi Revi. And then, as a result, when they found these, you know, this grain that had been hidden, so they went out and they took, you know, presumably whatever they had still left over, as the prophet had said to them, and they planted the seed on the second day of Nisan, on the third day of Nisan, and on the fourth day of Nisan. The Yordalehem Revi Yoshniyah Bachamisha B'Nisan. And then on the fifth day of Nisan, the second rain occurred. After all, remember, you have, you know, Yore Umalkush, you have a form of rain and you have a lateral rain, right? So the second rain occurred then on the fifth day of Nisan. So Hikrivu Omer Vishisha also ben Nisan, and they had enough already that they were able to bring the sacrifice of the Omer on the 16th day of Nisan. And you know, the law of the Omer is that it has to be an Omer of new barley. Has to be new barley, okay? So that the implication over here is that there was already enough grain growing miraculously as a result of this planting that they were able to bring the Omer on the 16th day of Nisan, which is the day, of course, following the first day of Yotib. And Nib says, Tebuah HaGedelo B'Shisha Chadoshim Gedelo B'Yachal Asoyom. And the result was that you find that the grain, which normally grows in 6 months, actually was growing in Achar Asoyom, in 11 days. Nimsa Omer HaKori Mitvua Shal Shisha Chadoshim Kori Mitvua Shal Achar Asoyom. And therefore, we find that the Omer, which normally is brought from grain which takes 6 months before it grows, was able to be brought as a sacrifice from grain which had grown within 11 days. The Aloso Hador, and concerning this generation, who Omer, you know, the Bible tells us, what? Hazor and Bedima, that they who sow the seed in tears, Berino Yitzora, they will reap in joy, literally in song or joy. Yes.
Just for the historical perspective.
Yes.
Yoel, I guess, is a minor prophet. That's probably.
Yeah, I don't like the term minor prophet, but you're correct. I mean that. Yes. He's part of the Treyos of the 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you tell us? This was in the kingdom of Israel in about what year?
Yeah. Joel was roughly during the days of the monarchy. I would say maybe about the year 700 or something like that.
No, that was...
That's before, yes. Before. It's long before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah.
Where was he? Was Yehuda or Israel?
Well, primarily it was for Yehuda, but in his day, you know, the prophets sometimes also spoke for Israel as well. I mean, look, you find, for example, Amos, you know, was born in Yehuda. I mean, Tekoa was part of Yehuda, but nevertheless, he went and he preached in Israel. They weren't always in a state of war with each other. There were times when the relations were friendly enough, you know, between the kingdom of Ephraim or Israel and the kingdom of Yehuda, and the prophets would sometimes go back and forth from one place to another.
So this would be in the time of Hezekiah?
No, it would be before Hezekiah.
Thank you.
At any rate, we don't know 100%, you know, exactly the chronology over here, because they didn't always give the chronology. Sometimes they mention in the days of which kings they prophesied, so that it's easier to date it. But if they didn't, then they didn't, you know. But we can sort of surmise that it was about this time. Okay? Yeah. Now, of course, you could object something else. I mean, that after all, they quote Joel, and then, concerning this generation, you know, we have a psalm in the, we have a verse in Psalms. But you have to remember that when it comes to making a drash, as we say, ain mukdam u'uchar. You don't have what comes first, and you don't have what comes last. In other words, you don't have any sequential order. You could play around with it. Okay. So, what he wants to point out is that concerning this great miracle, they started off life in tears. Azorim b'dima. I mean, remember they said, "What will we live on, you know, if we sow with this," right? So they were sore pressed about it. But the Rino Yitzoru, what did they do? They were able to reap with joy because the grain had grown for them and miraculously, and then they had food to eat now, okay? And how about the next part of it? Bo yovo v'rino. Excuse me. So maybe we okay, lechavocho, right. He surely goes forth weeping, no say, meshach hazora, while carrying the container with the seed in it, right? So they say, my holo chede chavocho, what is the meaning of that part of the pasuk? He says, and no se beshchet said, so Rabbi Yehuda, said, sure, it says, the ox, kishahu choresh, when he was plowing, hole chavocho, he was walking and weeping. Why was the ox weeping? Because there wasn't enough food for him to eat, right? V'chazir so, but when he returned, ochel chaziz minatelim, he is able to eat the new sprouts that were growing up from the burrows. V'zehu, and this is the meaning of boyovo v'rino, that, you know, he comes back, you know, singing. My no salem also, what is the meaning of that, where it says, you know, that he's carrying his sheaves? So Rab Chista said, and there are those who say that this is a tradition of the Baraisa, that Tana, who taught as follows, he says, Kone Zeres Shebolis Zerosayim, which means the Kone, the stalk itself of the grain, was only a Zeres. Zeres is, you know, this amount, okay? Actually, this is a Tefach. Zeres is even smaller than that. It was small. But the miracle is that Shibboleth, the actual ear of corn itself, you know, the ear of grain, don't like to use the word corn, because when I say corn, we immediately think in terms of American corn, you know, or what other kind of people call maize or maize and so on, you know, depending upon what language you're speaking, okay? But we're using corn in the more English sense, meaning, you know, grains that are used for making bread, okay? So, anyway, the ear of grain was Zerosayim, who was two spans. All right, what's the miracle about this? Normally we know, as Rashi explains, I'm quoting Rashi over here, that when you have a sheaf of grain, the stalk is always much bigger, much longer than the ear of corn, right? Than the ear of grain. I mean, we can see this if we grow corn. We know that the stalk is certainly a lot taller, you know, than the individual is. But here, the stalk was short, but the grain was big. So that this was a miraculous occurrence as well, we say. And that's why it was no say ala mosav, you know, they were carrying their sheaves in joy. So another thing that Rabbi Nachman said to Rabbi Yitzchak, he says, "My dear, what is the meaning of the pasuk which says, Ki karad Hashem l'ra'ov, that God has called that there should be a famine, the gam bo el ha'oretz sheva shonim?"